You can listen to The Professional Left wherever you get your podcasts, on Netroots Radio, or at our website, proleftpod.com, where you can also contribute to this podcast. There's a PayPal button at our website, or you can mail us a letter and or contribution at P.O. Box 9133, Springfield, Illinois, 62791.
This is the podcast for March 5th, 2021. It's not safe for work.
Recorded live from the world headquarters of the Cornfield Resistance, where... Dr. Seuss? Really? This is all you have left in your wingnut bullshit cannon? It's the Professional Left with Driftglass and Blue Gal.
Don't forget about Mr. Potato Head, Driftglass.
Yeah. Well, Seuss has pushed Tater Head out of the headlines, which is a real shame.
Yeah.
I don't even want to know where Dora's going to explore next at this rate. All I know is that we are both winning and losing.
Right. Right. I think that's I titled this episode in our notes, you know, the battle continues.
Yes.
And I think we all felt a sense of winning the presidential election was going to be such a relief.
And it is.
And winning back the Senate was going to be such a relief. And now finding out, oh, there's actual Democrats voting against the minimum wage increase today.
Yeah.
And what the hell? What is going on?
And
politics is going on. Exactly. I'm reminded of the Supreme Court during the whole Obamacare, which now they're just sick of. They just look at the lawyers for this and say, we are not deciding this anymore. But back in the day when the Supreme Court was being asked by Republicans to rescind huge parts of Obamacare.
Yeah.
And, you know, the Roberts Court upheld, said it's a tax and therefore it can go through.
Yep.
I didn't realize for many months afterwards how much negotiation was going on behind the scenes. And we'll give you this case because they're all looking at all of the cases in the docket. Right.
Right.
And OK, we'll go along with this one and so and so will vote yes on this. But we'll uphold this health care for everybody.
Mm-hmm.
And Roberts at that time, the claim was that he had concern for the standing of the court and that the court would be seen as illegitimate if they took away health insurance from 20 million people.
Right. History will record. Yeah.
History will record that they did this. And it may have been that, or it may have been just a deal.
Yeah.
And right now there's a 50-50 Senate and there are deals being made.
Yeah.
And everyone in that Senate chamber, you know, most of them multimillionaires,
most of them
aren't thinking about their next paycheck or their next meal. They're thinking about their next primary. That's all they care about is their next primary. And that is incredibly frustrating to those of us who give a shit about whether poor people have meals. You know, that is just, it is infuriating to see this going on. But this is the government we have right now. And I'm just trying to sort of step back when I can mentally and emotionally and say, okay, you know, okay, what is Sheldon Whitehouse saying today? What is Sherrod Brown saying today? What is Rachel Maddow saying today, for instance? What is Elizabeth Warren and Bernie Sanders? What are they doing? What
is
happening?
Hey, Dick Durbin. We can just go. He's like, he lives a mile and a half from here. So we can just go over to his house.
Smack him.
Yeah.
What's wrong with violence. Him? No violence.
Well, and let's remember how Vermont got all of those lovely rural health centers.
Yeah. Right. From the Sanders Center. Bernie Sanders negotiated for that.
He's put the squeeze on Barack Obama.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's how it works. I mean, the thing that I thought of today was, you know, in my mind, it's not this simple. I understand that. But you demand 20, you reluctantly settle for 15. And I just wonder if any of these people ever spent a minute on Maxwell Street in Chicago during its heyday, you know, haggling over rims and CDs and everything else and pantyhose and bras, because that's how shit works. That's how it's worked in the marketplace forever. Mm-hmm.
But it's hard when you want something so badly and you've waited so long.
Oh, yes. Oh, no. That's the worst time to negotiate.
I was reading a Twitter stream from... And I'm sorry, I don't remember the name of the person, but this person used to work for Harry Reid.
Mm-hmm.
And he said, you guys don't understand how different the Senate is today from what it was when I was helping Harry Reid and everything was getting blocked all the time.
Yeah.
And this is amazing. I am so optimistic about the future because people are talking in a different language than they were then. Mm-hmm. The Republicans can't block everything. And when they block things, people are paying attention.
Yes, they are.
And yes, I'm furious with the Democrats today who voted against the $15 minimum wage. I hope they're held accountable. I hope they understand how angry we are about this, the activists. But I'm not giving up. And no, I don't think Bernie Sanders is giving up. No. I don't think the Progressive Caucus in the House or Senate are giving up.
Nope.
And this is this whole milieu is going to be on the ballot in 2022. And Republican primaries are apparently going to be about bathroom bills and whether transgender people get to be on women's sports teams
and
rather
Dr.
than
Seuss and
jobs.
Dr. Seuss and Dr.
And healthcare.
Seuss.
Yeah, and Dr. Seuss rather than jobs and healthcare.
Yes, because people care a lot more about Mr. Potato Head than they do about their healthcare.
And their job. Jobs numbers came out today. Over 300,000 jobs added, mostly in the hospitality industry, mostly in the travel and hospitality industries, because they're gearing up for when these shots go into people's arms, that people everybody's going to want to take a trip.
Yeah, well, and in the at least in the Northern Hemisphere, we're going to hit that point right around the time when summer vacation should be kicking off.
It appears that way. I am telling myself that still that I'm getting a shot in late August.
Yes.
I'm just mentally not allowing myself any hope beyond that.
Right.
Because I don't want to be disappointed. I don't want to be that person who says, oh, shoot, I didn't get my shot in May. I am happy to be at the bottom of the list. We work at home.
Right.
We can handle it. You know,
wait a minute.
You know,
we're essential workers.
Liberal
podcasters in the Midwest, let's be very clear about that,
are
very rare creatures.
Essential workers.
And I think, and of course, well, wait a minute. We do our podcast out of our home, so that kind of shoots my own theory down.
And that's my point is, you know, I don't mind being the last one to get a shot as long as people are getting shots and it's moving forward. That said, the economists, according to several newsletters I got in the email today for work, economists are preparing for a 1920s boom.
Yeah,
you know,
roaring 20s. The
roaring 20s, yeah.
No, no, I think that's not unreasonable.
And if that's the case in 2022, you're going to – I don't see this being – it really bothers me when I see people on Twitter say, well, the midterms are over. It's like we haven't started fighting yet. And
we're doomed.
Remember what – and my TV husband said that today. Remember what the Republican primaries are going to look like.
Yeah.
It's going to be more Marjorie Taylor Greens and QAnon and Mr. Potato Head. And
we're also going to wait until the bottom of the list because we don't have $250,000 to give to our governor.
Which our former governor gave to the current governor of Florida as a campaign contribution when his gated community on the Florida Keys got immunizations for everybody.
Yeah.
They're on an island.
Yes, they are. And I wish that island were, I don't know, the one on Lost, perhaps, where you crank a wheel and they disappear. Wasn't he supposed to be in Italy? I mean, wasn't that the plan?
Yeah, he was supposed to. Well, and I can understand why not going to Italy during the pandemic was put the kibosh on it. But he wound up in the Florida Keys. This is former governor of Illinois. We call him Governor Hedge Fund. It's Governor Rauner, former Governor Rauner.
Disgraced former
governor. Now lives
governor
on the disgraced former
disgraced
governor.
Disgraced one-term former governor, Republican
one-term
Bruce Rauner.
Union buster.
Yeah, yeah.
Terrible governor. Terrible, terrible governor.
Uh-huh. And if he were still
no
here.
No budget for 2 years.
If he were still here, there'd be masks, you know, maskless Mondays.
Maskless Mondays. And there would also be no budget.
Right.
And we wouldn't have an immunization plan in place in Illinois because there would be no state budget to do it. Yes, I love your take on this, Driftglass.
What's that?
Politico is now mentioning that there's such a thing as Biden Republicans.
Oh,
they're
God.
Just like Reagan Democrats, exactly the same.
No, they're not. No, they're really, really not. I have to interrupt our podcast. It's not breaking news.
Oh,
I glanced over my shoulder at MSNBC, and who do I see there but a guy named Tim Miller.
Not again.
Yeah, Tim Miller, who's
on. We were just talking about him.
We literally were. I am, as you know, an aficionado. I patrol the outer perimeter of Never Trump land to make sure that they're.
You mean Biden Republicans, don't
Biden
you,
Biden Republicans. What am I saying? Biden Republicans. Cat Food Commission Biden Republicans. Why can't we be fiscally sensible like we were just 5 years ago? Republicans, those guys. Because I patrol the perimeter of the Never Trump podcast universe to ridicule them for all the bullshit that they talk about among themselves. Here is Tim Miller leaning in to in front of a wall-sized picture, leaning in, reminding people that he doesn't put up with the partisan bullshit. He's sick and tired of the partisan bullshit. And I think he uses the word bullshit because it's on Snapchat, and that's, you know, that's edgy. That's the kids love that. And the wall size graphic he is leaning into, demonstrating partisan bullshit, is Tucker Carlson on top and Rachel Maddow on the bottom. Mm. And he demonstrates his contempt for the partisan bullshit by appearing on MSNBC three times a day, every fucking day of the rest of your life.
You want to talk about red hat fury over Senate Democrats?
Yeah, the same people who were freaking out that Joe Biden might be the nominee and screaming that there's no difference, and the Susan Sarandon people, the mm-hmm. people who just couldn't shut the fuck up for 5 minutes about how there's no difference between the party and Democrats are probably worse and blah, 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 blah. They're now branded as hating Democrats. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. That's their brand. This is the Glenn Greenwald is leading the parade, but there's a lot of nut jobs with hundreds of thousands of followers who follow. And they bitch constantly about Senate Democrats. And that bitching leeches over into headlines about Senate Democrats this and Senate Democrats that, which is fine. Except what they're usually talking about is one Senate Democrat, mm-hmm. maybe two, mm-hmm. sometimes more than three or four, but not 50. And so it's the same thing that the Beltway Press does about Washington politicians.
Yes,
and
yes.
Congress is gridlocked. No, Congress – the Democrats in Congress are cranking out hundreds of bills, and Republicans are murdering them. Mm-hmm. That's the mm-hmm. gridlock. And when you ask Republicans, well, what do you want? They look at you like, well, we want to destroy the Democrats. Mm-hmm. We don't give a shit about COVID or poor people or power grid or anything. We're here to own the libs. That's all we're here for. And since you're not allowed to report that story in the mainstream media or you will lose your job, you throw up your hands and say, well, congressional gridlock, politicians in Washington. And our red hat friends are very much locked into that mode because it relieves them of the responsibility of actually differentiating between various people who do various individual things. You can just decry the entire system. Very much like over on the Never Trump podcast world, anything AOC says is what every Democrat believes. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Anybody mm-hmm. who ever said defund the police, that's every Democrat wants to defund police. Any school district in San Francisco that wants to get rid of the name Abraham Lincoln or George Washington School, every Democrat wants to do that. And the reason that they say these things is because they have a massive megaphone over at Fox that repeats this. They'll find some crackpot living under some bridge somewhere in California saying something stupid, and that becomes the story. That becomes the Dr. Seuss story. That becomes the Mr. Potato Head story. And that just bulldozes its way into the mainstream press. We don't have a megaphone, so we can't shout back at them, no. You know what? That is a representation of a fraction of a fraction of a fraction of our big tent over here. Your mm-hmm. party, on the other hand, is actually represented by seditionist lunatics named mm-hmm. Kevin McCarthy. Josh Hawley is an actual senator in your party, and he believes crazy shit. Your former president is a traitor, and most of your party still supports him. That's right. The true fact of your party. But since that would make people uncomfortable, it's important to invent liberal threats that are equal to the actual Republican threats. And so Senate Democrats, gridlock Washington, Mr. Potato Head, some guy in California doing something dumb, et cetera.
It's all lifeboat building, isn't it? It's all a way of distracting from the sedition and traitorous behavior of their party.
Well, and the real story is so easy. Yeah. It's one party is a political party with all the warts and wrinkles and corruption and whatever of any political party. The other one are traitors. The other one is the Confederacy.
And racists.
And racists. They're a bunch of white nationalists who got behind a bunch of violent insurrectionists and now want to pretend it never happened. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And that's the difference. And if you can't see that, then you're really trying really hard not to see it. because seeing it would impose a moral burden on you to do something other than sit on your ass and bitch about both sides, which is so easy. This podcast we're doing, we could bitch about both sides every week. But you know what, Blue Gal? We're better than that. And speaking of which, you're reading a novel, I believe.
Well, I wanted to just express gratitude for one blessing of the pandemic. I mean, it's hard. We're entering year two of lockdown and pandemic, and hopefully we're going to be out of it soon. But there have been some side benefits to being indoors, and one of them, it appears, is that the mid list for book publishing is back. And I didn't think that would ever happen again in my lifetime.
Me neither. I thought that was dead and gone. For people who don't know who that is, why don't you explain what that is?
Well, the mid list is the books that are published currently, new books, that are not trade paperback romance novels and are not super, super bestsellers.
Right.
And so you have, grocery store romance novels that sell.
Yes,
Spin Rack. And you have these huge, Spin Rack, right. And you have these big, huge mystery novels and adventure novels that will be at the top of the, and Michelle Obama's book. A lot of words in those books.
People seem to enjoy them. So.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, and so you have those kind of books that do very well and hold publishing houses, make money off of those.
Right.
And then there's the mid-list. And the mid-list are books that sell modestly, have fans. There are authors that are well-loved by a select group of people. And it used to be that you could make a living writing by making these, having books, publishing a book every 2 years and make a living at it.
Yep.
And that went away for a while. And I don't know what authors are making these days off of midlist books, but I do know that there's a thing called BookTube, which is people on YouTube who are librarians or work in a publishing house or have some sort of connection to the book publishing world, reading world, who are going on YouTube with stacks of books from publishers and saying, I've read this, it's great. I've read this. I'm interviewing this author on my Instagram page. And going through a stack of books that came out this month. And, here's what it's about. Here's why I like it. And I'm going to interview the author. And by the way, next month, we're having a read-a-thon for a week. And we're all going to read the same three books in 1 week, which I can't do, read three books in 1 week. No. But it's just amazing. And you have to be very careful, though, if you start watching BookTube, because all of a sudden you will be wanting to buy tons of hardcover books.
I have noticed a sudden influx of books into our home.
And it's hard not to order them from a certain worldwide seller. I will tell you, the A company does not make any money off of books. No. But we certainly want that company to unionize. And it seems like the president wants them to unionize, too. He's being very nice about that.
Well, I used to dream about back, many, many decades ago when I dreamed about being an author, a writer of books and things. I took classes and I was a pretty good writer. I published some short stories and some medium sized stories and I drafted, the outlines for novels and took it very seriously. And then, I started noticing that every writer I knew who was a professional was running in the opposite direction. Getting a job at Leo Burnett, editing ad copy, getting a job, getting a tenure teaching job, which is great, but it requires you to, go to school and get your master's and then get in line and get tenure so that.
And hope you're not an adjunct because you won't have health insurance if you're an adjunct. Yeah.
And then somewhere down the line, when you become a full-time instructor, you will have a university structure that will allow you to basically, that's your patron. That's the person who will pay your bills and cover your health expenses while you do something else, while you write a novel, which is terrific. I'm all for that. But when it became clear the mid-list had just been vaporized, there was really no point in me.
And who knew that and there was a thought that the internet was just going to destroy reading as well. And the pandemic has brought people back to books. And that is incredibly exciting.
Yes, it is.
And life is so much better when I'm reading a good book. I will just tell you that.
It is. And in our home, my wife will frequently say, I just want to read you this one paragraph.
I just want to read you this one part.
This one paragraph. Because
it's good writing, and I know how much you appreciate and good writing.
Usually my toes curl up and go, yeah, baby.
Ooh, yeah, look who I married.
That's awesome. That's freaking awesome.
So if you will indulge me, this is a substitute for Bible bitch.
It's Biblio bitch.
Biblio bitch. There you go. Mm-hmm. I'd love to hear feedback from folks if they want me to talk about the book I'm reading, because if I'm reading something really good, I'd love to share that with you. I know this is a political podcast, but reading is political. All things are political. And the book I'm reading right now is called No One Is Talking About This. Mm-hmm. It's by Patricia Lockwood, and she is a editor over at the London Review of Books. It's about a character who is overwhelmed by the internet. And she scrolls and scrolls and reads social media all the time. And she's become famous as a result of social media. She calls the world that she enters through her phone the portal. And it's almost impossible to get out of the portal. And what I'm only a little bit into this book, but what's going to happen, I've read the description, is she's going to get a text from her mother that says, something has gone wrong. How soon can you get here? And that's going to be the turning point of the book. Okay.
Well,
now you know what the book is about.
I thought the twist would be she calls someone trash on the internet
and she gets out of banned the from social media
forever. But
maybe that's the book you need to write.
Yeah, maybe that's me imposing my condition on other people, which I have a habit of doing.
That book, Driftglass.
I bet I could.
So two paragraphs from this book that I read to you this morning.
Yeah.
And they do say something about our social media world that I thought was really good. She had become famous for a post that said simply, can a dog be twins? That was it. Can a dog be twins? It had recently reached the stage of penetration where teens posted cry face emoji at her. They were in high school. They were going to remember, can a dog be twins, instead of the date of the Treaty of Versailles, which, let's face it, she didn't know either. There was a new toy. Everyone was making fun of it. But then it was said to be designed for autistic people. And then no one made fun of it anymore, but made fun of the people who were making fun of it previously. Then someone else discovered a stone version from a million years ago in some museum, and this seemed to prove something. Then the origin of the toy was revealed to have something to do with Israel and Palestine. And so everyone made a pact never to speak of it again. And all of this happened in the space of like 4 days.
And we're done. Mm-hmm.
And so this is just sort of describing what the world that she's entered into and how she really has a hard time escaping it. Mm-hmm. And I'm looking forward to reading the rest of it. It's been a fun read so far. Again, it's called, and I'm not getting anything for telling you this. I'm just telling you about a book that I'm enjoying.
Love that book.
No, it's called No One Is Talking About This. Mm-hmm. And it's by Patricia Lockwood. Okay.
Well, I'm reading a book. Well, I was going to read a book. Ron Johnson has done it for me, so I don't really need to do it, which is, you know, God bless Ron Johnson for saving me all that.
Did you see the people tweeting about, oh, my God, there's so much good stuff in this bill besides the $1,400 check? You realize there are subsidies for child care? You can get reimbursed up to half of your child care bill on this? There's subsidies for middle class people. For instance, if you're a two income family and you're a nurse and you make 60 grand a year and your husband's in insurance and makes 60 grand a year and you have one kid, you don't get an Obamacare subsidy.
No, you're almost entirely.
That's not us, but I can see where two people who and you know, you're trying to pay a mortgage and you're trying to have child care and so forth. All of a sudden, you don't have an Obamacare subsidy and your insurance is, you know, $1,800 a month. It's more than your house. And so Biden put in this very long bill that if you're in that boat, and we're not, but if you're in that boat, you cannot pay more than 8.5% of your income in health insurance premiums. And anything over 8.5% of your income, and I'm sorry, there's a complicated formula. It's like 400% of the federal poverty level, which I think is $108,000 a year. Anyway, if you're up in that stratosphere of income, you don't have to pay more than 8.5% of your income in health insurance premiums. And the federal government under Obamacare will subsidize the cost above that price. So everybody's health insurance bill in that range is going to go down a lot. Now, the other thing I read was that that particular provision expires in January of 2023. So Obamacare is back on the ballot in 2022. Mm-hmm. And whether you want to keep those subsidies, and those are people who expect to be able to afford a middle-class life, mm-hmm. There's so much in this bill about helping middle-class people and below afford a middle-class life, because that's what that's what Biden wants to do. He right. wants to make, first of all, he wants to make a serious dent in child poverty. And he wants to help middle-class people be able to afford a middle-class lifestyle. Mm-hmm. And this bill has so many gems in it that, you know, we're focused on the $1,400 checks and we're focused on the $15 minimum wage. And those are things we should be fighting for. On the other hand, being able to deduct or get a credit for half of your child care costs is huge for parents that are paying for daycare.
Yeah.
So apparently there's a whole bunch of good things like that in the bill that someone said, thanks, Ron Johnson, for reading the bill out loud. I noticed that there's all this good stuff in there that is going to be passed. I think Biden will be signing this by next Monday. Oh, did you notice that Ron Johnson slept through the evening or missed the part where Chris Van Hollings came in and limited the debate to 3 hours.
You know, you snooze, you lose, Ron Johnson.
And Ron Johnson wasn't there. He snoozed and he lost.
Yeah. He woke up just in time to hear Ted Cruz say, what, we're not going to debate Dr. Seuss?
Yeah. And yeah, I was going to read Green Eggs and Ham again.
Yeah. No one wants to hear from you, Ted Cruz.
We want to mention that a new episode of our other podcast, Science Fiction University, is up.
It is.
At sciencefictionuniversity.com. Mm-hmm. So if you're into that or just want to hear more of our voices while you do housework, it's there for you. And I think it's a good episode.
Oh, it does the job.
Yeah.
It does the job. No, I'm sorry. The last episode of WandaVision does the job.
Yeah. Well,
our episode of Science Fiction University is awesome, and you should definitely go check it out. It's a wonderful website. I do want to talk a little bit about The Bulwark. Yesterday was very interesting because it was Mickey Edwards. Mickey Edwards was a Republican forever. He was an Oklahoma congressman for 16 years. He founded the American Enterprise Institute. He founded mm-hmm. the organization that created CPAC. He goes way, 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 way back. And he and Charlie Sykes spent an hour reminiscing about things that never happened and things that are not happening now. And I wanted to introduce a word to your vocabulary called prognoplexia or prognoplexia, which derives from a Greek word which roughly means ancestoritis or an unhealthy obsession with one's ancestry. It made me sad and depressed and like we're not going to ever reach these people because they can't be reached. You know, the garden snake who won't shut up about how his great-grandfather was a dinosaur because he literally has nothing else to brag about. People who brag about their ancestors, especially many generations removed, have nothing else going for them. So they talk mm-hmm. about, you know, my great-great-grandpa was a field marshal under Napoleon. And your father was a criminal and your mother was a whore. Why don't we talk about them for a while? And that is what I got from listening to these two gentlemen talk about the fact that there was a glorious time way back in the past that they remember very, very vividly about the good days, the good old times of St. Ronald Reagan and Bill Buckley standing up to the Birchers. And they really, really shine up and glamorize and misremember just exactly how anti-racist and firm Bill Buckley was, because he wasn't, mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. and what a firm stand he took against the Birchers, which he didn't. And they kind of don't remember anything about Reagan's Philadelphia, Mississippi speech or his mm-hmm. obsession with welfare queens. They just gloss all over that those were the good old days.
And so let me ask you a question, Driftglass.
Sure.
Do you think that Democrats would benefit in any way from doing that? I don't mean lying about your past, but somehow celebrating your ancestry, your political ancestry.
Sure. We're the party of George Washington. Done. Done and dusted. We're done.
No, we're the party of FDR. We're the party of JFK. We're the party of, we're the party of the Vietnam War. You gotta, but see, that's my problem is I go back in history and I actually look at stuff and say, oh, wait, we did this bad thing. I'm focused today on 8 Democrats who voted against $15 an hour. You know, I mean, I don't go ahead and pretend that the past is 100% my way. It's not.
Well, so the short answer is no, because I think memory is what we have. Memory is our superpower. Yeah. And you get into really big trouble. These guys, and I kind of understand this, and this is not necessarily a vicious rebuke. Mm-hmm. It is, I kind of pity them. If they hadn't fucked up my country so badly, I'd really feel sorry for them because in a real sense, they've lost everything. They have nothing of lasting value left at all. They have money. They got tons of money. And they can call, blow in one call to MSNBC or CNN and get an audience of 100,000 or 300,000 or a million people to listen to their bullshit. But what they do lack is their life's work turned to shit. Mm-hmm. And their beliefs have been exposed as farce. There's no theory of explanation of how us crazy crackpot liberals accurately predicted exactly what was going to happen to their party. Other than the fact that they were too blind and too deeply invested in the lie they were telling themselves to see it coming, which means that unless they, as Lincoln would say, disenthrall themselves of the giant lie they've been telling themselves about conservatism and republicanism for most of their adult lives, they're just going to keep making the same mistakes over and over and over again. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And it's sad, but as I call them, these are dry drunk Republicans.
Yeah,
they gave up the demon rum of the party, but they still believe all the stupid, crazy, self-absolving shit that all Republicans tell themselves. And this would not have been possible. The last third of this podcast was them talking about both sides doing it, you know. Wow. And AOC said a thing on TV because in their minds, AOC is the entire Democratic Party.
I'm just gonna say something right now.
Okay.
AOC is the best politician in America.
Oh, she is. She is.
Period.
She's the one who scares, and she's the one who scares them the most.
She scares them.
Scares the shit out of them.
Because she's so good at messaging, at sticking to her values, and putting those values into action.
Absolutely.
And reaching audiences that Charlie Sykes could only dream in the deepest sleep of reaching.
Well, and let me just say, Mickey Edwards says the left has kind of given up on the norms of liberal democracy. And it's both the left and the right. And we on the left don't really care about the Constitution. And then Charlie Sykes holds his hand and says, well, it's this cycle, this vicious cycle of one side does it, the other side does it. And they're doing bad things, so we need to do bad things. And every violation of norms, I'm quoting now, invites the other side to also violate norms. Isn't that a shame how both sides do it? And I'm sitting there listening to this going, but we just had a constitutional scholar as president, didn't we? The guy who, you know, might well have stepped straight out of their fondest centrist dreams. Mm-hmm. The one who repeated and earnestly extended to their party every opportunity to work together and who was told by their party to go fuck himself at every possible opportunity. Who trashed him and from day one, literally from the first day Barack Obama.
Did they mention Barack Obama on
not
the,
at all.
Ever?
Not one fucking word. Because Obama is the giant inconvenient asterisk to their entire stupid lying theory about how both sides do it.
Yep.
It just negates everything. And so instead of not believing in the democratic process, Charlie, who I know is listening to this, because he does, because occasionally he'll say, you know, I know there are liberals who listen to this podcast who think, you know, blah, blah, blah. Yeah, I do, Charlie. And I listen to because you have a gargantuan platform that you use to lie to people. And I know why you're doing it, because you're ashamed of your past. And if I had your past, I'd be ashamed too. But maybe, just maybe, I think you're sincere about wanting to not take ownership of all the things you said. But here's the thing. Maybe Democrats didn't abandon Constitution norms. Maybe we've learned the lesson the hard way, the same thing, way Lincoln had to learn the lesson the hard way, that when a portion of your country is in the hand of violent fanatics bent on destroying that country, waving the Constitution at them and saying, pretty please stop, doesn't fucking work. You know what works? Destroying them by any means available. That's what we are all about now, because your party is so dangerous that we have to take extraordinary steps to stop them. And continuing to hold Democrats to this, well, why do Democrats have to do, because your party is
why
an
do,
evil.
Why do Democrats have to pass a national law about elections in order to protect democracy
and maybe,
from your party?
Well, and let's face it, the worst thing Democrats are threatening is rebalancing the courts, overruling a parliamentarian, and modifying the filibuster.
Right.
So I think Republicans should consider themselves damn lucky that Democrats aren't proposing Sherman's march across every Republican shithole state in this country and just wrecking them, taking the fucking army and saying, marching into these shithole Republican states saying, no, voting rights are going to be protected by the 101st Airborne. And if you cross that line, we're going to shoot you down.
We're going to have ballot boxes on every street corner with a liberal soldier standing there whose orders are, any tampering with this right to vote will be, you'll be arrested.
Right. That is what your party's extremism and destructiveness actually calls for. So Democrats,
and that's why we're on the moral high ground. We want everybody to have a vote.
We want to all have votes. We want to all have health care. We want everyone to have a job.
And everyone needs to understand this, that in 2020, with vote by mail, our Republican congressman increased his margin of victory.
By tens of thousands.
By tens of thousands.
Yep.
Vote by mail is not a guaranteed Democratic win everywhere. And we want everyone to vote, and despite the fact that I really wish I had a Democratic congressperson here in my district.
I wish we had two, because we have an overlap here.
I will tell you, I would rather have voting rights for all than that. I really would.
Yep.
I really, really would.
And that's the fundamental, irresolvable schizophrenia of the Never Trumpers. Yeah. They acknowledge their party has become this horrible, destructive thing, and freak out when you say, well, then we're going to have to stop it using whatever means necessary. Like, no. You have to still follow.
You don't want to do that. That would be bad.
You still have to follow the rules of bipartisanship and these antiquated Senate rules that your party has just fucking wiped its ass with and laughed at and abused to destroy democracy. Mm-hmm. And they can't reconcile those two, because it would involve saying the left was right. The left is doing what it must do to save the country, and we should just let them do it because our party is evil and needs to be stopped by any means available. And they can't say that, because they would indict themselves and would fuck up their whole, because they've moved on to the second lie. The second lie is, sure, the Republican Party is bad, but we had nothing to do with it. And liberals are probably just as bad too. That's the bubble that they live in. And they that bubble is supported and subsidized by cable news and by op-ed pages and so forth. It's a lie. But it's a different lie than what the rest of the Republican Party is saying, which is the election was stolen, Donald Trump is a god, and liberals are the spawn of the devil. So we're fighting on two fronts. And I realize that it's much more fun to point at Josh Hawley and say, that's a fascist. I know a fascist when I see one. That's the guy your grandfather was fighting against in Germany. But it is equally important to point to the accommodationists in the middle. Who want to say, yeah, he's bad. We agree he's bad. But you know what? Liberals are bad too. And we had nothing to do with it. We were innocent. We were in Switzerland the whole time. We had nothing to do with it at all.
I'm going to skip over CPAC, except to say that it increased my blood pressure. It increased other people's blood pressure to just see that person on the stage. And I loved, we don't have this in our notes, but I love Stacey Abrams' answer about that. And she just said, I don't care what that man does. I'm focused on the people I'm going to help.
Yeah.
And I've just given that man 30 seconds that I did not intend to do. Moving on. Mitch McConnell. This is a story that might go under the wire, under your attention span. And it's important. Mitch McConnell's trying to get his buddies in the Kentucky legislature to change the law so that the Democratic governor of Kentucky, Andy Beshear, is not allowed to appoint Mitch McConnell's replacement should Mitch McConnell decide to resign his seat in the Senate. It's to allow a committee of people who are the same party as the departing senator is the way he's putting it. So he wants a Mitch McConnell clone, somebody he has chosen, because you know that it's going to be his buddies on the commission.
Sure.
And he wants to pick his own replacement. Moscow Mitch. That is so on brand for Moscow Mitch. Yeah, it really is.
I would like – see, I find there's a middle ground here because I want Rand Paul's neighbor to be his replacement.
That's a good one.
We can find some middle ground in between those two. I'm sure we can.
Sit right next to Rand.
In the spirit of bipartisanship, let's find a middle place.
Bipartisanship, everybody. Mm-hmm. Yeah. What was this about Glenn Greenwald saying Tucker Carlson is a true socialist?
Yeah, he's the real socialist. Okay. Glenn Greenwald, someone put the last mask is off, and I'm not done, but I'm kind of done with saying I told you so. I told you so. Yeah, please, when I tell you that my nose is telling me something stinks, 9 times out of 10 I'm right. Maybe give me the benefit of the doubt next time. And this week David Brooks got greedy, or he got greedy and got caught. And a bunch of people have conveyed to me via my wife that I must be, because I'm not on Twitter, that, oh my God, this is
you must be dancing around the house is what one correspondent wrote me. And I said, no, he hasn't been fired from the New York Times yet. So no dancing.
David Brooks has done a lot of this shit. He's got a million side hustles on top of his side hustles. Always has.
His side hustle has a side hustle.
And New York Times has never blinked. He's falsified things in his column. He's lied about things he wrote in the past. He used to write about the importance of poor people getting married to, you know, save their neighborhood from being disorganized. You know, poors need to get married and stay married, and that's just how things should work, while he was dumping his wife and never talked about that. He never talked about his son, you know, crossing an ocean to enroll in Bibi Netanyahu's army until someone said, hey, you talk a lot about Bibi Netanyahu. Isn't your son a member of the IDF? And like, well, yes, I suppose so. David Brooks is not a moral man. David Brooks pretends to be a moral man, but David Brooks is all about David Brooks, and he's got a brand. He needs to protect that brand. So he took a bunch of money from Facebook and other people to promote Facebook, and he shouldn't have done it. And apparently this is a very big scandal among people who get paid as journalists. And I don't think anything's going to come of it because he is a Sulzberg family house pet, and they don't get rid of their house pets. So that's all I have to say about that.
I'm going to talk for a second about Neera Tanden, who was week's sacrificial lamb. The Biden administration rescinded her appointment to the Office of Management and Budget, and they will find a place for her in the White House. And people who did not support her or decided that her mean tweets disqualified her are going to be very sorry that they did that.
Yes, they will.
And that's all I have to say about that. Because she'll be in a position to make some changes that they will not like. I guarantee you. Kayleigh McEnany is joining Fox News. Did you know, Driftglass, that last Friday, the day we recorded the podcast, Fox News announced that Kayleigh McEnany was not currently an employee of the network.
Yeah, well, that's...
And then on Tuesday, they announced that Kayleigh McEnany is an employee of the network.
And they took a page out of Lincoln, saying that the Confederate commissioners are not in Washington. They're parked right outside Washington, but that's not the question you asked. You asked, are they in Washington? Is she a member of Fox News? No, she's in the HR department having a urine test, and then she gets to be a member of Fox News. So she has gone from low-level CNN wingnut troll to official White House wingnut troll, and now on to being the official Fox News wingnut troll. So she's really got that career arc down.
And she was on Fox News constantly as Trump's press secretary. Oh yeah. No. So this is a totally lateral move for her.
Yeah. Better money, I'm guessing.
Yeah. Better money. Mm-hmm. Bet you. CNN is no longer covering White House press briefings, but you can guarantee they'll be covering the empty Trump lectern.
Oh, yeah. Every time.
Anytime he decides to go on television. Yeah.
That's our bad journalism report of the day. That and Kayleigh McEnany. CNN decided, well, it's not bread and circuses anymore. It's just, you know, boring people talking about policy. And nobody wants to see that. So off they go.
Let's jump into a news roundup.
We already talked about Governor Hedge Fund. Potentially, did he? Did he jump the vaccine line by giving $250,000 to Rick, to Governor DeSantis?
We know that he got a vaccine, and we know he gave $250,000 to DeSantis. So, I would say that's a quid pro quo.
Let's wait until the investigation is concluded,
There's not going to be any investigation. No. Give me a break.
Texas has decided to go maskless. That's always exciting. They decided, hey, you know what? We didn't kill enough people with hypothermia, and with dehydration. And to distract from that whole story, let's get more Texans killed by COVID. By the way, it's all Biden's fault. So
today, Biden's fault because, the governor of Texas is now blaming Biden's immigration policies. How long has Biden been president?
Biden's and a half.
Immigration policies are what is all COVID-y. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
The FDA has authorized Johnson & Johnson's one-shot coronavirus vaccine for emergency use. Johnson & Johnson's initial supply will be limited to 3.9 million doses, with about 800,000 going directly to pharmacies. And then there is an expected 20 million doses expected by the end of March and 100 million doses by the end of June. And Joe Biden has implemented the Defense Production Act.
Yes, he has.
So that Johnson & Johnson and which is it, Pfizer? I believe it's Pfizer, mm-hmm. Will work together to produce vaccines. And the Johnson & Johnson's vaccine will be produced in Pfizer plants, mm-hmm. Which is very exciting news.
As we mentioned, the Senate has already rejected Bernie Sanders' $15 minimum wage hike, which was to be added to the $1.9 trillion relief bill. And several Democrats voted against it. And their names are Joe Manchin, Kristen Sinema, John Tester, Jeanne Shaheen, Maggie Hassan, Chris Coons, Tom Carper, and independent Angus King of Maine. All 42 other Democrats voted for it. So, you know, this is the problem with having a closely divided Senate. Everybody becomes the president of the United States.
The Senate voted to open debate on the coronavirus relief bill. It's actually called the American Rescue Act. And the vote was 51 to 50 with our Vice President, Kamala Harris, breaking the 50 to 50 tie.
The House passed the expansion of the Federal Voting Rights Act called the For the People Act, which creates uniform national voting standards, overhauls campaign finance, outlaws partisan redistricting, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. The measure passed 220 to 210 with one Democrat joining all Republican House members in voting against it. The bill is unlikely to draw the 60 votes needed to advance it in the Senate, which means we need to get rid of the filibuster or modify it.
In some way.
Yeah. As Rachel Maddow pointed out last night, we can modify it. The filibuster can be shrunk to say, okay, we're going to let you filibuster other things, but not things that involve civil rights and voting rights. Because that's mm-hmm. just way too Jim Crow-ish for right. us to continue to allow. So we're not going to allow that.
They can also just modify the filibuster to say you have to pull out the cots.
Right.
And you have to talk for 72 hours. Mm-hmm. And you have to have your entire majority of your caucus there to watch you do it.
That's right.
And if you don't do that, then it's not a filibuster, and we move on with whoever is sitting there.
With the vote. We're going to have a vote.
Being the majority, right. Mm-hmm. The House passed the George Floyd Justice and Policing Act. The policing reform bill would ban chokeholds and racial and religious profiling, establish a national database to track police misconduct, and prohibit certain no-knock warrants. The legislation would also alter qualified immunity, a legal doctrine that shields officers from lawsuits, making it easier to pursue claims of police misconduct. The bill passed 220 to 212 with two Democrats voting against it and one Republican accidentally voting for it. After the vote, Representative Lance Gooden,
Lance
tweeted that he had pressed the wrong button. Uh-oh.
Oh,
and
no.
He meant to vote no, Lance.
Lance. All right. He fell asleep and his head hit the button. The Bidening continues. The Biden administration will convert immigrant family detention centers in Texas into quick release intake facilities, which will rapidly screen migrant parents and children and release them into the U.S. within 72 hours. The Biden administration task force for reuniting migrant families separated by the Trump administration will allow those families to reunite and settle in either the United States or their country of origin. Homeland Security Secretary Alejandro Mayorkas called the separation of more than 5,500 migrant families under the Trump administration, quote, the most powerful and heartbreaking example of cruelty that preceded this administration. Remember, cruelty was always the point.
Biden said that the U.S. expects to have a large enough supply of coronavirus vaccines to vaccinate every adult in the nation by the end of May, 2 months earlier than anticipated.
And President Joe Biden, ever heard of him? Called Texas Governor Greg Abbott's decision to relax the coronavirus restrictions Neanderthal thinking, and that it was a big mistake for people to stop wearing masks.
Yep. Which brought about Neanderthal Gate.
Yeah.
Fox News mentioned Neanderthals about 150 times in one day.
Uh-huh.
And, you know, that's their new thing.
Yeah. Yeah.
And so yesterday, Driftglass, was March 4th, which was the non-inauguration of Donald Trump.
Uh-huh. Biggest one. Biggest one in
biggest
history.
Biggest one. biggest crowd. Hugest crowd. Hugest crowd.
Yep. Four people, I hear. Yep.
looked like a lot of failed doomsday cults when the day of MAGA reckoning came and went with no reckoning at all. You just changed the date to the 20th now. Right. It's now March 20th.
Mm-hmm.
If the Republicans were smart, they'd just go with none shall know the hour of his return.
Right.
Which has kept the church on its toes for 2,000 years. You're right about that.
It's true. See, there's a little Bible bitch we just slipped in right at the end there. we learned this week what we've already known for many, many, many years, that the number one threat to this country is domestic terrorism carried out by white nationalists called Republicans.
Thank you. Major General William Walker testified that he had National Guard troops at the ready for more than 3 hours on January 6th while he waited for Trump's Defense Department to authorize their deployment.
Yeah.
Never forget that.
Never forget that. Trump issued the stand down order. Never forget that. We learned this week also that Trump's Justice Department decided not to open a criminal investigation into the actions of Elaine Chao when she was Transportation Secretary. According to the Inspector General's report, Chao, the wife of Moscow Mitch McConnell, repeatedly used her position and agency staff to help her family members who run a shipping business with ties to China. Chao also required DOT staff to help with personal errands, do chores for her father, which included editing his Wikipedia page, and promoting his Chinese language biography. You know, your tax dollars at work.
There were several days during the week she simply didn't show up at the office, yeah, well, too. She was a no-show job. Yeah.
There's no transportation. There's no infrastructure. Why bother?
A number of former Trump officials say they're struggling to pay rent after lump sum vacation payouts got delayed because the cost of living in D.C. is so high, and apparently there are no vacancies at the Trump Hotel and every other boarding house that has a no traitors sign in the window.
So sad. I feel so sad for those people. 62% of Americans support the $1.9 trillion COVID stimulus package, while 34% oppose it. That's bipartisanship.
That's 62%
is goddamn bipartisanship.
Dolly Parton got a dose of her own medicine in the best possible way.
Yes, she did.
Yes, she got the vaccine that she helped to fund. The development of the vaccine. So we're proud of her.
Yeah. National
and
treasure.
You want to talk for very briefly about an alderman in Springfield, Illinois,
yeah,
who got shafted, basically.
He did. Yeah. He got shafted. Nice guy, fully qualified, runs the Faith Coalition for all good stuff in Springfield. People know him. People like him. He's a veteran. You know, what more do you want? And in our area, the woman who, Dorothy Turner, has been advanced to take a seat by Andy Menar, who is leaving to join the governor's office. So that's how things work. And he was appointed to fill out her term, which is 2 years long at this point.
Doris' term was an alderman.
Right.
She got promoted. Her seat is vacant. They have to appoint somebody to replace Doris Turner.
Right.
And this gentleman was asked to do it.
He was. He was asked to do it and fully qualified and was interviewed and asked if he was going to plan to keep the job. And he said, well, I'd like to hang out for a while and figure out if I'm good at it. And if I'm good at it, maybe I'll run for reelection. And that apparently disqualified him. This is the poorest ward in Springfield that desperately needs representation. He'd be an excellent alderman or alderperson. But the ritual is that you don't appoint someone to any seat to fill out any length of term, even if it's 2 years long, who has any designs on actually, you know, running for reelection to that seat. That's somehow unfair because we don't have special elections. They just all – the older people all get together and they vote. And who's voted down? 6-3. And it's just such a screwed up system because some of the older persons who voted against him apologized to him.
Yeah, I was going to say – and his name is Roy Williams Jr.
Yeah.
Well known in the community that he was appointed to serve.
Yeah.
And they felt bad.
We did.
There's no politics involved with this. It's how we do things. We only appoint a placeholder.
And nobody told him that.
Nobody
told him that the trick is you got to go in and say the following magic words and the job is yours.
Yeah.
He was honest and said, I don't know. I might want to run for this job. Now, this was an emergency election, which means you had to have like a 6-vote majority. He gets to go up again if he wants to in a week or a month, and it's a non-emergency for some reason, and all he needs is 5 votes. But the fact remains, this is just stupid. If the person is a month out and it would give an unfair advantage, and it's some back scratching, you know, seat filling job that we want to give my nephew a leg up into politics so he can just sit here for a month with a thumb up his ass and then run for office, I get it. But this is 2 years of representation of a poor ward that desperately needs representation in Springfield. And this is the perfect guy to do it. And to say that he is unqualified because he might be qualified for the job in 2 years is just obscene and stupid. And they shouldn't do that. But they did. And that's how local politics works in strange places like Springfield.
Thank you, Jeff Glass. Each week we post to our Facebook page and website an internet kitty sent in by you, the listeners. This week's internet kitty is Baby. Baby is an indoor cat and likes to sit on the kitchen table and chitter at the birds in the trees outside. So he can see, Baby can see the birds from the top of the kitchen table. And so that's where Baby sits.
I got a question about Baby. Has Baby ever?
Nobody puts Baby in a corner, Driftglass.
No. Well, no, I was wondering if Baby has ever considered chittering at field mice, because we have field mice showing up at our door.
We have them in the front porch where we put out some bird seed, and there are little field mice that have come up and entertain the cats that way. It's our big screen. We call our storm door the big screen TV for the cats. It's definitely works. And of course, Baby eats freshly poured cat food, our fake sponsor. Whether you serve pet store perfection or dollar store dreck, your cat will sit on the kitchen floor or occasionally the kitchen table and demand that the food they eat is only freshly poured. Freshly poured, freshly poured. Oh, my Lord, it's freshly poured. And you can visit Baby at our Facebook page or website. And you can send your internet kitty or other pet to us at our email address, proleftpodcast@gmail.com, or you can also write to both of us. Feel free to write us. We love hearing from you. Be aware, if you write us at any of our addresses, we reserve the right to read your email or U.S. Postal Service. Go Postal Unions! Letter on the air unless you say otherwise. Hashtag save the post office. Don't forget our gourmet coffee guideline. If you can afford to buy an espresso-based beverage for yourself, buy one for us. This is not charity. This is our job, and it's a labor of love. Approximately 1% of our listeners support this podcast with a contribution, and you can too. See our website, proleftpod.com, for details. Both our PayPal and postal address information is there at proleftpod.com. Please share our show on social media, and thank you so much for doing that. Hey, Driftglass, how are the Internet Kitties doing this week?
Well, Blue Gal, the Internet Kitties are wondering if they've held on to their GameStop shares for too long.
Let's think about living. Think about living. Let's think about loving. Think about loving. Let's think about the hooping and the hopping and the bopping and the loving, lovey-dovey. Let's forget about the whining and the crying, the shooting and the dying, and the fellow with a switchblade knife. Let's think about living. Let's think about life.
The Professional F Podcast is recorded under a Creative Commons license. Copyright 2021 DGBG Productions.